Under the first swiping claw, he carved a deep gash along the beast's left foreleg. When it reared back to bellow in pain, he sliced another deep groove in its soft underbelly. The rancor didn't fall right away. It was far too massive to be felled by a pair of wounds from a lightsaber. Instead, the pain drove it into a berserk rage. It flailed about with its teeth and talons, spinning, snapping, and slashing at everything around it. Kasim twisted and dodged, leaping over one attack, then dropping to the ground to roll beneath another. He moved so fast, he would have been nothing but a blur had the rancor not been blinded by rage. And with each evasion, he struck another blow, whittling away at the mountain of sinew and flesh like a master sculptor working on a lump of lomite. The rancor floundered, lumbering and stumbling as if it were performing some drunken spacer's dance. In contrast, Kasim was quick and precise. With each passing second, his opponent slowed, its strength ebbing away. At last, with a forlorn groan, the beast toppled forward and lay motionless. Leaving the beast where it collapsed, Kasim pressed on with a newfound urgency to his pace. The battle, short and simple as it had proved, was the first time he'd been tested in a true life-or-death struggle since he'd agreed to help Cordis train the students at the academy. He was pleased to see that his skills had not been diminished by the long layoff. Kasim had a feeling he was going to need those skills again before the day was through. Bane was sitting cross-legged on the stone floor of the central chamber on the Rakatan Temple's uppermost floor. He was meditating on Revan's words, as he'd often done between the Holocron's lessons. Now that the artifact was gone, it was even more important to contemplate what he'd learned about the nature of the dark side and the path it would lead him down. By its very nature, the dark side invites rivalry and strife. This is the greatest strength of the Sith. It culls the weak from our order. The constant battling of the Sith since the beginning of recorded history served a necessary purpose. It kept the power of the dark side concentrated in a few powerful individuals. The Brotherhood had changed all that. There were now 100 or more Dark Lords following Khan, but most were weak and inferior. The Sith numbers were greater than they had ever been, yet they were still losing the war against the Jedi. The power of the dark side cannot be dispersed among the masses. It must be concentrated in the few who are worthy of the honor. The strength of numbers was a trap, one that had snared all the great Sith lords who had come before. Naga Sadao, Exar Kun, Darth Revan, each had been powerful. Each had drawn disciples in, teaching them the ways of the dark side. Each had assembled an army of followers and unleashed them against the Jedi. Yet in each and every case, the servants of light had prevailed. The Jedi would always remain united in their cause. The Sith would always be brought low by infighting and betrayals. The very traits that drove them to individual greatness and glory, the unrelenting ambition, the insatiable hunger for power, would ultimately doom them as a whole. This was the inescapable paradox of the Sith. Khan had tried to solve the problem by making everyone equal in the Brotherhood, but his solution was flawed. It showed no understanding of the real problem, no understanding of the true nature of the dark side. The Sith must be ruled by a single leader, the very embodiment of the strength and power of the dark side. If all are equal, then none is strong. Yet whoever rose from the swollen and bloated ranks of the Sith to claim the mantle of Dark Lord would never be able to hold it. In time, the apprentices will unite their strength and overthrow the Master. It is inevitable. Together, the weak would overwhelm the strong in a gross perversion of the natural order. But there was another solution. A way to break the endless cycle dragging the Sith down. Bane understood that now. At first he had thought the answer might be to replace the Order of the Sith with a single, all-powerful Dark Lord. No other masters, no apprentices, just one vessel to contain all the knowledge and power of the dark side. But he had quickly dismissed the idea. Eventually, even a Dark Lord would wither and die. All the knowledge of the Sith would be lost. If the leader grows weak, another must rise to seize the mantle. One alone would never work. But if the Sith numbered exactly two, minions and servants could be drawn into the service of the dark side by the temptation of power. They could be given small tastes of what it offered, as an owner might share morsels from the table with his faithful curs. In the end, however, there could be only one true Sith master. And to serve this master, there could be only one true apprentice. Two there should be, no more, no less. One to embody the power, the other to crave it. The rule of two. This was the knowledge that would lead the dark side into a new age. A revelation that would bring an end to the infighting that had defined the Order for 1,000 generations. The Sith would be reborn. The new ways would be swept away. And Bane would be the one to do it. But first he would have to destroy the Brotherhood. Khan, Cordis, all who'd studied with him on Korriban, all the masters on Rusan, had to be purged until he alone remained. Darth Bane, Lord of the Sith. The title was his by right. There was no other strong enough in the dark side to challenge him. The only question that remained was who was worthy of being his apprentice, and how he would eliminate the others. Bane! Cassim's voice cut off his thoughts midstream. I come with an invitation from Lord Khan! Bane leapt to his feet, whipping out his lightsaber, enraged at being disturbed on the cusp of enlightenment. He glared at Cassim, as angry at himself for being too engrossed in his own thoughts to sense the Twi'lek's presence as he was at the interruption.
How did you find me?
He asked, casting out with his mind to see who else might have invaded the Rakatan Temple and its inner sanctum. He felt a mixture of relief and disappointment when he realized Cassim was alone. He'd been hoping for one more, but she must have chosen not to come.
Lord Khan told me you had come to this world. Once I entered the atmosphere, I simply followed the Valsin's beacon, the Blade Master replied. How Lord Khan knew you would be here, I couldn't say.
Bane suspected Githany must have told him, but he didn't bother telling that to the Twi'lek. Instead, he asked,
Did Khan send you to kill me?
Cassim gave a slight nod.
If you will not join the Brotherhood, I will leave your corpse on this barren and forgotten world.
Baron, Bane echoed, incredulous. How can you say that? The dark side is strong here. Far stronger than it ever was on Korriban. This is where we will find the power to destroy the Jedi. Not in Khan's Brotherhood.
Korriban was once a place of great power too,
his former instructor countered.
Over the centuries, thousands of Sith have explored its secrets, and none of them discovered any great strategy to defeat our enemy.
The Twi'lek ignited his double-bladed lightsaber before continuing.
It is time to end this foolish quest, Bane. The old ways have failed. The Jedi defeated those who followed them. Exar Kun, Darth Revan, they all lost. We have to find a new philosophy if we want to defeat them.
For a brief moment, Bane felt the faint flicker of excitement. Cassim's words echoed his own thoughts. Was it possible the Blade Master was the apprentice he sought? Cassim's next words brought Bane's hopes crashing down.
Khan understands this. That is why he created the Brotherhood. The Brotherhood is the future of the dark side.
Bane shook his head. The Blade Master was as blind as all the others. For that, he had to die.
Khan is wrong. I will never follow him. I will never join the Brotherhood.
Cassim sighed.
Then your life ends here.
And he leapt in, his weapon moving with far more speed than he'd ever shown during their practice sessions. Parrying the first sequence, Bane realized his former master had always been holding something in reserve, just as Bane himself had done in the early stages of his battle against Sirak. Only now was he seeing Cassim's true ability, and he was barely able to defend himself. Barely, but still able. His opponent grunted in surprise as Bane warded him off, then stepped back to regroup. He'd come in hard and fast, expecting to end their battle quickly. Now, he had to reevaluate his strategy.
"You're better than you were when we last fought,"
he said, clearly impressed and making no attempt to hide it.
"So are you,"
Bane responded. Cassim lunged in again, and the room was filled with the hiss and hum of lightsabers striking each other half a dozen times in the space of two heartbeats. Bane would have been carved to ribbons had he tried to react to each move individually. Instead, he simply called upon the Force, letting it flow through him and guide his hand. He gave himself over to the dark side completely, without reservation. His weapon became an extension of the Force, and he responded to the Twi'lek's unstoppable attack with an impenetrable defense. Then he went on the attack. In the past, he had always been afraid to surrender his will to the raw emotions that fueled the dark side. Now he had no such limitations. For the first time, he was calling on his full potential. He drove Cassim back with furious slashes, forcing his old mentor into a backpedaling retreat across the floor of the chamber. Cassim flipped back and out through the door into the hall beyond. But Bane was relentless in his pursuit, leaping forward and coming within a centimeter of landing a crippling blow to the Twi'lek's leg. His strike was turned aside at the last second, but he quickly followed it up with another series of powerful thrusts and stabs. The Blade Master continued to give ground, pushed inexorably back by the raging storm of Bane's onslaught. Each time he tried to change tactics or switch forms, Bane anticipated, reacted, and seized the advantage. The outcome was inevitable. Bane was simply too strong in the Force. Only some unexpected maneuver could save Cassim, but they had fought too many times in the past for him to surprise Bane now. Over the course of his training, Bane had seen every possible sequence, series, move, and trick with the double-bladed lightsaber, and he knew how to counter and nullify them all. The Blade Master became desperate. Leaping, spinning, ducking, rolling, he was wild and reckless in his retreat, seeking now only to escape with his life. But he didn't know the temple like Bane did. Bane kept the routes to the outside cut off, slowly herding his opponent into a dead-end hallway. Recognizing what was happening, Cassim blew open the heavy door of a side room with the Force and dived inside. Bane knew there was no other exit, and he paused at the threshold of the room to savor his victory. The Twi'lek stood in the center of the empty chamber, panting heavily, stooped ever so slightly, his head bowed. He looked up when Bane stepped through the doorway, but when his gaze met Bane's, there was no hint of defeat in his eyes. "You should have finished me when you had the chance," he said. There was less than 5 meters between them, but it was just enough space for Cassim to give the hilt of his lightsaber a quick twist. The long handle separated in the middle, and suddenly he was armed not with one double-bladed lightsaber, but with a pair of single blades, one in each hand. Bane hesitated. Few of the students at the academy had even attempted to use two sabers at once. The Blade Master had always discouraged them from this variation of the fourth form, saying it was inherently flawed. Now, as he saw the cruel and cunning expression on his enemy's face, Bane understood the real truth. The battle was rejoined, but now it was Bane who was in full retreat. Without proper training, even his enormous command of the Force was unable to anticipate the unfamiliar sequences of the two-handed fighting style. His mind was flooded with a million options of what his opponent might attempt, and he had no experience to draw on to eliminate any of them. Overwhelmed, he staggered back, floundering with the desperation of a drowning man. Within the first few passes, Bane knew he couldn't win. Cassim had trained his entire life for this moment. After years of study, he'd mastered all 7 forms of the lightsaber. Then, he'd honed his skills for decades, perfecting every move and sequence until he'd become the perfect weapon and the greatest living swordsman in the galaxy. Maybe the greatest swordsman ever. Bane was no match for him. The Blade Master was unrelenting in his pressure. He seemed to wield 6 blades rather than 2. He attacked with a peculiar rhythm designed to keep his foe off balance, coming in with one blade high and the other low at the same time, striking from opposite sides at odd and opposing angles. Bane had no option but to fall back and back and back. He was fighting now with a single purpose, somehow escaping with his life. One hope gave him the strength to persevere in the face of overwhelming odds. One advantage the Blade Master had lacked during his own retreat. He knew the layout of the temple, and he was able to work himself slowly toward the exit. Battling through the halls and corridors, the combatants rounded a corner to bring them in sight of the Rakatan Temple's only entrance. The wide archway and the small landing beyond, with the wide staircase leading back down to the ground nearly 20 meters below. In the instant it took Cassim to recognize where they were and realize that his opponent might still escape, Bane thrust out with the force. He knocked the Twi'lek off balance for a brief second, then backflipped out through the archway and onto the landing. He dropped into a crouch, still facing his opponent. But in his haste, Bane had leapt too far. He was balanced precariously on the precipice of the uppermost stair, the steps falling sharply away behind him. Cassim responded by using the force to knock Bane backward, sending him tumbling down the great stone staircase away from the Blade Master. The fall would have broken his neck, or at least fractured an arm or a leg, if Bane hadn't cocooned himself in the force. Even so, he reached the bottom, bruised, battered, and momentarily stunned. On the landing high above, Cassim stood beneath the massive arch of the temple entrance, staring down at him.
"I will follow you wherever you run," he said. "Wherever you go, I will eventually find you and kill you. Don't live your life in fear, Bane. Better to end it now." "I agree," Bane replied, hurling out the wave of force energy he'd been gathering during the Blade Master's speech.
There was nothing subtle about Bane's attack. The massive shockwave shook the very foundations of the Great Rakatan Temple. The concussive blast had enough power to shatter every bone in Cassim's body and pulverize his flesh into a mass of pulpy liquid. But at the last possible instant, he threw up a shield to protect himself from the attack. Unfortunately, he couldn't shield the temple around him. The walls exploded into great chunks of rubble. The archway collapsed in a shower of stone, burying Cassim beneath tons of rock and mortar. A second later, the rest of the roof caved in, drowning out the Twi'lek's dying screams with a deafening rumble. Bane watched the spectacle of the temple's implosion from the safety of the ground at the foot of the stairs. Billowing clouds of dust rolled out from the wreckage and down the stairs toward him. Exhausted by the long lightsaber battle and drained by the sudden unleashing of the force, he simply lay there until he was covered in a layer of fine white powder. Eventually, he struggled wearily to his feet. Reaching out with the force, he sought some sign that Cassim might still be alive beneath the mountain of stone. He felt nothing. Cassim, his mentor, the only instructor at the academy who had ever actually helped him, was dead. Darth Bane, Dark Lord of the Sith, turned his back and walked away. Chapter 24. There was neither time nor reason to mourn Cassim's death. For all his use in the past, he'd become simply an obstacle in Bane's path, an obstacle that was now gone. Yet his arrival on Lihon had prompted Bane to action. For too long, he had separated himself from the events of the galaxy, seeking wisdom, understanding, and power. With the temple's destruction, there was no reason for him to remain on the unknown world. And so, he began the long trek through the jungle on foot, following the same path Cassim had taken only hours before. He could have used the force to summon another rancor to speed him along, but he wanted time to think about what had happened and how he would deal with the Brotherhood. Khan had perverted the entire Sith Order, transforming it into a sickly assemblage of mewling sycophants. He'd tricked them all into believing they could achieve victory over the Jedi through martial might. But Bane knew better. The Jedi were many, and they gained strength when united against a common foe. That was the nature of the light side. The key to defeating them wasn't fleets or armies. Secrecy and deception were the weapons to bring them down. Victory could only come through subtlety and cunning. Subtlety was something Khan lacked. If he'd been smart, he would have sent Cassim to Lihan in the guise of a disgruntled follower. The Blade Master could have arrived with a tale of how he'd turned his back on the Brotherhood. Bane would have accepted him as an ally. He would have been suspicious, of course, but over time, his vigilance would have waned. Sooner or later, he would have let his guard down, and Cassim could have killed him. Assassination was quick, clean, and effective. Instead, Cassim had come and issued an open challenge, following the rules of some foolish code of honor. There was no honor in his end. There was no such thing as a noble death. Honor was a lie, a chain that wrapped itself around those foolish enough to accept it and drag them down to defeat. Through victory, my chains are broken. Bane followed the Rancor's trail through the trees without incident. The denizens of the jungle steered well clear of him. He caught a brief glimpse of a pack of six-legged felines scavenging the corpse of a Rancor along the path, but they scattered at his approach. They waited a long time after he was gone before slinking back to continue their meal. By the time he arrived at the beach, he had devised his plan. Cassim's ship was sitting on the sand beside his own, and he quickly stripped it of supplies, including the message drones. He lugged them over to his own vessel, then made a quick inspection of the Valson. Finding all systems in working order, he boarded. Before liftoff, he programmed a course into the message drone using coordinates he'd downloaded from Cassim's ship. A few minutes later, the Valson launched from the unknown world surface, climbing higher and higher until it broke through the atmosphere into the black void of space. Bane punched in the hyperspace coordinates of his destination, then discharged the message drone. The drone would reach Rusan within a few days, offering Khan a truce and delivering a gift. A gift he suspected Khan would be too foolish and vain to recognize for what it really was. The Brotherhood would never defeat the Jedi. And as long as they existed, the Sith would be tainted, befouled like a well, poisoned at the source. Bane had to destroy them. All of them. To do that, he'd have to use the weapons Khan had been too proud or too blind to use against him. Deception and betrayal. The weapons of the dark side.
"I don't like splitting our squads like this,"
Pernikar whispered, following closely at Lord Hoth's heel. The general looked back along the ragtag line of soldiers trudging through the forest. Less than a score in total, half-starved, most wounded, and ill-equipped. They looked more like refugees than warriors in the Army of Light. They were carrying supplies from the drop point back to the camp, as were two other caravans taking different routes.
"It's too dangerous to travel in one large group,"
Hoth insisted.
"We need these supplies. Splitting us into three caravans gives us a better chance that at least some of them will make it back to camp."
Hoth glanced back along the path they'd come, wary of signs of pursuit. The rains had stopped nearly a week earlier, but the ground was still soft. The passing of his troops left deep impressions in the loamy ground.
"Even a blind Gamorrean could track us now,"
he grumbled. Silently, he wished for a return of the concealing rains he'd so often cursed these past few months, while sitting huddled and shivering beneath inadequate shelters fashioned from leaves and fallen branches. Yet he knew it wasn't trackers they had to worry about. He cast out with the Force, trying to sense hidden enemies lying in wait in the trees ahead. Nothing.
Of course, if there were any Sith, they would be projecting false images to conceal themselves for their... "Ambush!"
One of the points screamed, and then the Sith were upon them. They came from everywhere, warriors wielding lightsabers, soldiers armed with blasters and vibroblades. The clash of Durasteel and the hiss of crossing energy blades mingled with the screams of the living and the dying. Screams of rage and triumph, of agony and despair. A volley of blaster fire ripped through his lines, taking down those Padawans too inexperienced to deflect the shots. A second volley tore through the melee. The bolts ricocheted wildly as Sith and Jedi alike batted them aside, doing little real harm but adding to the chaos. Lord Hoth stood in the thickest of the fighting, hewing down foes foolish enough to come in range of his fierce weapon. His nostrils were filled with the greasy, sweet stench of charred flesh, and a wall of bodies was mounting around him. And still, they kept coming, swarming over him like carrion beetles in a fresh kill, seeking to drag him down by sheer numbers. Purnakar vanished beneath the sea of enemies, and Hoth redoubled his efforts to reach his fallen friend. He was unstoppable in his fury, like the devastating storms of the Maw itself. When he reached him, Purnakar was already dead, just as the rest of them soon would be. An explosion on the edge of the battle briefly drew his attention skyward. One eager minion of the Sith lunged forward, seeking glory beyond her wildest expectations by trying to kill the mighty general while he was distracted. Hoth never even turned his gaze, but merely cast out with the Force, imprisoning her in a stasis field. She stood helpless, frozen in place, until struck down by the careless follow-through from a vibroblade wielded by one of her own side. Her death barely even registered in Hoth's conscious thoughts. He was focused on the four swoop bikes barreling down on the battle, their heavy guns pounding into the enemy lines. The Sith ambush scattered, unable or unwilling to stand against heavy air support. It took all of Hoth's Jedi training not to chase after them and hack them down from behind as they fled into the safety of the trees. A moment later, the swoops landed to cheers from the dozen or so Jedi still standing. Lord Valentine Farfalla, looking as fastidiously proper as ever, dismounted and bowed low before his general. "I heard you were bringing supplies, my lord," he said, rising with all the affected elegance of a Coruscant senator. "We thought we'd come give you an escort." "There are two other caravans," Hoth snapped. "Instead of standing here gloating, you should be heading out to help them." Farfalla pursed his lips in displeasure, a peevish, pouty expression. "We have other swoops escorting them already." He hesitated, as if considering whether to say anything more. Hoth shot him an angry look that all but screamed at him to remain silent. Despite this, or maybe because of it, he added, "I thought you'd be more welcoming to my reinforcements."
"You've been gone for months," Hoth snarled. "While you've been out playing diplomat, we've been stuck here in a war."
"I did as I promised," Farfalla responded coldly. "I've brought 300 Jedi reinforcements. They'll be in your camp as soon as we have enough fighters to break our transports through the Sith planetary blockade."
"Little comfort to those who gave their lives waiting for you to arrive," Hoth shot back.
Farfalla glanced at the corpses scattered on the ground. Seeing Purnakar among them, his expression fell. He crouched down beside the body and whispered a few short words, then touched the fallen soldier once in the center of his brow, before standing up once more. "Purnakar was my friend, too," he said, his tone softer now. "His death pains me as much as it does you, General."
"I doubt that," Hoth muttered angrily. "You weren't even here to see it."
"Do not let your grief consume you," Farfalla warned, the ice back in his voice. "That path leads to the dark side."
"Don't you dare speak to me of the dark side," Hoth shouted, jabbing an angry finger in Farfalla's face. "I'm the one who's been here battling Khan's Brotherhood. I know its ways better than anyone. I've seen the pain and suffering it brings, and I know what it will take to defeat it. I need soldiers, supplies. I need Jedi willing to fight the enemy with the same hatred they feel for us."
He let his finger drop and turned away.
"What I don't need is some prancing dandy lecturing me on the dangers of the dark side."
"Purnakar's death is not your fault,"
Farfalla said, coming forward to place a comforting hand on Hoth's shoulder.
Let go of your guilt. There is no emotion. There is peace.
Hoth wheeled around and slapped his hand away.
Get away from me. Take your blasted reinforcements and run back to Coruscant like the mincing cowards you are. We don't need your kind here.
Now it was Farfalla who turned away, stomping angrily back to his swoop bike, while the rest of the group watched in silent shock and horror. He threw one long leg over the seat and fired up the engines.
Maybe the other Jedi will write about you, he said, shouting to be heard over the roar of his swoop. This war has consumed you, driven you to madness. Madness that will lead you to the dark side.
Hoth didn't bother to watch as Farfalla and the other swoops sped off into the distance. Instead, he crouched down beside the body of his oldest friend and wept at his brutal, senseless end. When Githany finally arrived, Khan had to keep himself from snapping at her. She had already seen him with his guard down, uncertain, unsure. He had to be careful when dealing with her now, lest he lose her allegiance, and he needed her more than ever. Instead, he spoke in a casual tone that held only a hint of icy disapproval beneath its surface.
I sent for you nearly 3 hours ago.
She flashed him a fierce, savage smile. There was a sortie going out against one of the Jedi supply caravans. I decided to go with them.
I haven't heard the reports yet. What was the result?
It was glorious, Lord Khan. She laughed. 3 more masters, 6 Jedi Knights, a handful of Padawans, all dead. Khan nodded his approval. The tide of battle was ever-changing on Rusan, and with the end of the rainy season, the pendulum had swung back in favor of the Sith. Of course he knew it was more than a change of weather that had restored the morale of his troops and brought them a string of resounding victories. The Army of Light was fractured. Their numbers on Rusan were dwindling. Valentine Farfalla was orbiting the world with reinforcements, but Khan's spies reported a rift between Hoth and Lord Farfalla that kept the newcomers from joining the fray. Without Master Pernikar to blunt their sharp animosity, the two Jedi Masters' mutual antipathy was crippling the Jedi war effort. The irony of the situation was not lost on Khan. For a change, it was the Jedi who were split by infighting and rivalries, while the Brotherhood of Darkness remained united and strong. Part of him found the strange reversal troubling. In the long nights when he couldn't sleep, he'd often walk the floor of his tent wrestling with the seeming paradox. Had the armies on Rusan crossed a line where light and darkness meet? Had the endless conflict between the Army of Light and the Brotherhood of Darkness drawn them both into a void where the ideologies became hopelessly intertwined? Were they all now force users of the twilight, caught between the two sides and belonging to neither? However, the arrival of the morning sun would inevitably banish such thoughts with news of yet another Sith victory in the field. And only a fool questioned his methods when he was winning, which was why he wasn't sure what to make of the message he'd recently received from Darth Bane.
Kasim is dead, he told Githany, getting directly to the matter at hand.
Dead? Her shocked reaction affirmed Khan's decision not to share this news with the rest of the Brotherhood. He'd been careful to keep the purpose of the Blade Master's departure secret until he knew the outcome of the confrontation.
Was it the Jedi? She asked.
No, he admitted, choosing his words carefully. I sent him to parley with Lord Bane. Kasim thought he could convince him to join us. Instead, Bane killed him.
Githany's eyes narrowed.
I warned you about him.
Khan nodded.
You know him better than any of us. You understand him. That is why I need you now. Bane sent me a message.
He reached over and flicked on the message drone sitting on the table. A tiny hologram of the heavily muscled Dark Lord materialized before them. Even though the details of his expression were difficult to make out at that size, it was clear he was troubled.
Kasim is dead. I killed him. But I've been thinking about what he said before he died.
Githany gave Khan a curious look.
He shrugged and tilted his head toward the hologram as it continued to speak.
I came here searching for something. I'm not even sure what it was, but I didn't find it. Just like I didn't find it in the Valley of the Dark Lords on Korriban. And now Cassim is dead, and I don't know what to do.
The projection bowed its head, lost, confused, and alone. Khan could clearly see the scorn in Githany's expression as she watched the spectacle before her. At last, the figure seemed to compose itself, and it looked up once more.
I don't want Cassim's death to be in vain. I should have listened to him in the first place. I want to join the Brotherhood.
Khan reached out and flicked the drone off again.
Well, he asked Githany, is he serious, or is this just a trap?
She chewed at her lower lip.
I think he's sincere, she finally said. For all his power, Bane is still weak. He can't surrender himself fully to the dark side. He still feels guilt when he uses the Force to kill.
Cordis mentioned something similar, Khan said. He told me Bane had a chance to kill a bitter rival in the dueling ring at the Academy, but he pulled back at the last moment.
Githany nodded.
Sirak. He just couldn't bring himself to do it. And Cassim was his mentor. If Bane was forced to kill him, it would have been even harder for him to deal with it.
So I should send an emissary to meet with him?
She shook her head.
Bane is more trouble than he's worth. He's vulnerable now, but as his confidence returns, he'll become as headstrong as ever. He'll bring dissension to the ranks. Besides, she added, we don't need him anymore. We're winning.
So how do you propose we deal with him? Assassins?
She laughed.
If he could handle Cassim, then I doubt anyone else will stand the chance against him. Anyone but me.
You?
Githany smiled.
Bane likes me. I wouldn't say he trusts me exactly, but he wants to trust me. Let me go to him.
And what will you do when you find him?
Tell him I miss him. Explain that we've considered his offer and we want him to join the Brotherhood. Then, when his guard is down, I'll kill him.
Khan raised his eyebrows.
You make it sound so simple.
Unlike Cassim, I know how to handle him, she assured him. Betrayal is a far more effective weapon than the lightsaber.
She left the tent a few moments later, taking the message drone and the coordinates Bane had sent along for the meeting. Khan had every confidence she'd get the job done, and he saw no reason to share with her the small package that had arrived in the message drone storage compartment. Bane had sent it to Lord Khan as a peace offering, a way to atone for Cassim's death. It wasn't much to look at. Text written on several sheets of flimsy, the writing cramped and hurried, as if it had been recorded while listening to someone else speak. Yet within its pages, it contained a detailed description of one of the most fearsome creations of the ancient Sith, the Thought Bomb. An ancient ritual that required the combined will of many powerful Sith lords, the Thought Bomb unleashed the pure, destructive energy of the dark side. There were risks involved, of course. That much power was highly volatile, making it difficult to control, even for those who had the strength to summon it. It was possible the blast could annihilate the entire Brotherhood along with Hoth's Army of Light. The vacuum at the center of the blast could suck in the disembodied spirits of Sith and Jedi alike, trapping them side by side for all eternity in an unbreakable state of equilibrium at the heart of a frozen sphere of pure energy. Khan doubted he'd actually have need of such a weapon to finish off the Jedi here on Rusan. After all, he was winning the war. Still, as he began his pacing for another long and sleepless night, he couldn't help studying the ritual of the Thought Bomb over and over again.
Chapter 25. From a distance, Ambria looked beautiful. An orange world with striking violet rings,
It was easily the largest habitable planet in the Stennis system. Yet anyone landing on the world would quickly realize that the beauty faded soon after entering the atmosphere. Many centuries earlier, the failed rituals of a powerful Sith sorceress had inadvertently unleashed a cataclysmic wave of dark side energy across the surface of the world. The sorceress had been destroyed, along with almost all other life on Ambria. What survived was little more than barren rock, and even now plots of fertile ground were few and far between. There were no real cities on Ambria. Only a few hardy settlers dwelled on its surface, scattered so far apart, they might as well have been living on the planet alone. The Jedi had once tried to cleanse Ambria of its foul taint, but the power of the dark side had permanently scarred the world. Unable to purify it, they succeeded only in concentrating and confining the dark side in a single source, Lake Nath. The homesteaders brave enough to endure Ambria's desolate environs gave the lake and its poisoned waters a wide, wide berth. Of course, Bane had made his camp right on its shores. Ambria was located on the fringes of the expansion region, only a quick hyperspace jump away from Rusan itself. The evidence of several small battles that had been fought here between Republic and Sith troops during the most recent campaign was everywhere. Fallen weapons and armor littered the stark landscape. Burned out vehicles and damaged swoops were visible from kilometers away on the hard, cold plains. Apart from a few of the local settlers scavenging for parts, nobody had bothered to clean up the remains. The ringed planet was an insignificant world. Too few resources and too few people for the Republic fleets that now controlled the sector to worry about. Bane had heard that a healer of some skill, a man named Kalib, had come to the world once the fighting had ended. An idealistic fool determined to mend the wounds of war. A man not even worthy of Bane's contempt. But now, even that man might have forsaken this world once he'd seen how little salvageable remained here. For all intents and purposes, the world was forgotten. It was the perfect place to meet Khan's envoy. A Sith fleet would be quickly detected by the Republic vessels patrolling the region, but a small ship, and a skillful pilot, could sneak in without any trouble. Bane had no intention of setting up a meeting someplace where Khan could send an armada to wipe him out. He waited patiently in his camp for Khan's emissary to arrive. Occasionally, he glanced up at the sky or looked out across the horizon. But he wasn't worried about anyone sneaking up on him. He'd see a ship coming into land from several kilometers away. And if they came to him in a ground vehicle, like the land crawler sitting on the edge of his camp, he'd hear the grinding of its engines or feel the unmistakable vibrations of its heavy treads as they churned their way over the uneven terrain. Instead, all he heard was the gentle lapping of Lake Nath's dark waters against the shore, not 5 meters from where he sat. And all the while, his mind wrestled with the only question he still had no answer for. Two there should be. No more, no less. One to embody the power, the other to crave it. Once he had rid the galaxy of the Brotherhood of Darkness, where would he find a worthy apprentice? The whine of a buzzard's engines pulled him away from his thoughts. He rose to his feet as the ship dropped from the sky and circled his camp once before touching down a short distance away. When the landing ramp lowered and he saw who came down, he couldn't help but smile. "Githany," he said, rising to greet her once she had crossed the distance between them. "I was hoping Lord Khan would send you." "He didn't send me," she replied. "I asked to come." Bane's heart began to beat a little quicker. He was glad to see her. Her presence awakened a hunger inside him he'd almost forgotten existed. Yet he was troubled, too. If anyone could see through his ruse, it was her. "Did you see the message?" he asked, studying her carefully to gauge her reaction. "I thought you were over this, Bane. Self-pity and regret are for the weak." Relieved, he bowed his head to continue his charade. "You're right," he mumbled. She stepped in closer to him. "You can't fool me, Bane," she whispered, and his muscles tensed in anticipation of what she would do next. "I think you're here for something else." He held his ground as she leaned in slowly, poised to react to the first hint of threat or danger. He let his guard down only when she brushed her lips softly against his. Instinctively, his hands came up and seized her shoulders, pulling her in closer, pressing her lips and body hard up against his own as he drank her in. She wrapped her arms around his broad shoulders and neck, returning his insistence with her own urgency. Her heat enveloped them. The kiss seemed to last for all eternity. Her scent wrapped around their entwined flesh until he felt he was drowning in it. When she at last broke away, he could see the fierce eagerness in her eyes and still taste the sweet fire of her lips. He could taste something else, too. Poison! Bedazzled by her kiss, it took him a second to realize what had happened. Whether Githany believed him or not hadn't mattered. She'd asked Khan to let her come here so she could kill him. For a brief second, he was worried, until he recognized the faint, tricopper taste of rockwort venom. He laughed, gasping slightly for air. Magnificent, he breathed. Secrecy, guile, betrayal. Githany may have been corrupted by the Brotherhood's influence, but she still understood what made the dark side strong. Was it possible she could be his one true apprentice, despite her allegiance to the Brotherhood? She smiled coyly at his compliment. Through passion we gain strength. Bane could feel the poison working its way through his system. The effects were subtle. Had his growing strength in the dark side not made his senses hyper-aware, he probably wouldn't even have noticed its presence for several hours. Yet once again, Githany had underestimated him. Rockwort venom was powerful enough to kill a bantha, but there were far more rare and lethal toxins she could have chosen. The dark side flowed through him, thick as the blood in his veins. He was Darth Bane now, a true Dark Lord. He had nothing to fear from her poison. The fact that she had thought he wouldn't detect it on her lips, the fact that she thought it would even harm him, meant that she must have believed his performance. She suspected he had fallen away from the dark side again. She thought he was weak. He was glad. It made her decision to side with Khan more forgivable. Maybe there was still hope for her after all. But he had to be sure. I'm sorry for abandoning you, he said softly. I was blinded by dreams of past glory. Naga Sadao, Exar Kun, Darth Revan. I lusted after the power of the great Dark Lords of the past. We all crave power, she replied. That's the nature of the dark side. But there's power in the Brotherhood. Khan is on the verge of succeeding where all those before him have failed. We are winning on Rusan, Bane. Bane shook his head, disappointed. How could she still be so blind? Khan may be winning on Rusan, but his followers are losing everywhere else. His great Sith army has crumbled without its leaders. The Republic has driven them back and reclaimed most of the worlds we conquered. In a few more months, the rebellion will be crushed. None of that matters if we can wipe out the Jedi, she explained eagerly, her eyes blazing. The war has taken a heavy toll on the Republic. Once the Jedi are gone, we can easily rally our troops and turn the tide of war. All we have to do is wipe them out, and the ultimate victory will be ours. All we have to do is win on Rusan.
There are other Jedi besides those on Rusan, he replied.
A few, but they're scattered in ones and twos across the galaxy. If the Army of Light is destroyed, we can hunt them down at our leisure.
Do you really believe Khan will win? He's claimed imminent victory before, then failed to deliver on his promise.
For one who claims to want to join the Brotherhood, she noted with some suspicion, you don't seem particularly devoted to the cause. Bane's arm shot out and grabbed her by the waist, pulling her in close for another savage kiss. She gasped in surprise, then closed her eyes and gave in to the physical pleasure of the moment. This time it was she who finally pulled back with a faint sigh.
You were right when you said I came back for something else, he said, still holding her close. The treacherous poison on her lips tasted just as sweet the second time.
The Brotherhood cannot fail, she promised. The Jedi are on the run, cowering and hiding in the forests.
He let her go and stepped away, turning his back to her. He desperately wanted to believe she was capable of becoming his apprentice once he destroyed Khan and the Brotherhood. But he still wasn't sure. If she truly believed in what the Brotherhood stood for, then there was no hope.
I just can't accept what Lord Khan preaches, he confessed.
He says we're all equals, but if all are equal, then none can be strong.
She stepped up behind him and placed her hands on his shoulders, applying gentle pressure until he turned to face her once again. Her expression was one of amusement.
Don't believe everything Khan says, she warned, and he could hear the naked ambition in her voice, one to embody the power, the other to crave it.
Once the Jedi are destroyed, many of his followers will discover that some of us are more equal than others.
He swept Githany up in his mighty arms with a joyful roar, spinning her around and around as he gave her another long, hard kiss. This was what he wanted to hear.
When he finally set her down, she stumbled back half a step, unsteady after his unexpected outburst. She regained her balance and gave a startled laugh.
I guess you accept, she said, with a sly smile on her poison-slicked lips. You pack up your camp. I'll go ahead and let Khan know you're coming.
I can't wait to see the look on his face when you tell him about this meeting, he replied,
still pretending he was unaware of the poison raging unchecked through his blood.
Neither can I, she replied, her voice giving nothing away. Neither can I.
As the surface of Ambria fell away beneath her and the glorious rings came into view, Githany couldn't help but feel a twinge of regret. The passion she'd awakened in Bane had given him a sudden, surprising strength. She'd felt it in each of his kisses. But it was clear Bane was interested in her, not in joining the Brotherhood of Darkness. She punched in the coordinates for the jump back to Rusan and leaned back in her seat. Her head was spinning from the poison that had coated her lips. Not the Rockward venom. That was only there to lull Bane into a false sense of security. But the Synox she had mixed in with it. The colorless, odorless, tasteless toxin favored by the infamous assassins of the Geno Haradan was having an effect despite the antidote she'd taken. She had no doubt Bane would soon be feeling much, much worse than she did. A single kiss would have been enough to kill him, but he'd received a triple dose. She was going to miss Bane, she realized, but he was a threat to everything Lord Khan was working for. She had to side with one or the other, so naturally she had chosen the one with an entire army of Sith at his command. It was, after all, the nature of the dark side.
Bane watched the buzzard until it disappeared in the sky, before turning his attention to gathering up his camp. He would have to act carefully now. Githany would tell Khan she tried to poison him. When he showed up at the camp still alive, things could become difficult. He could simply stay away and let events run their course. The Jedi on Rusan would rally, turning the tide of the battle once again. It was a given. Bane was counting on it. Desperate, Khan would then turn to the gift Bane had sent him. He would unleash the thought bomb, unaware of its true nature. And then every Force user on Rusan, Sith and Jedi alike, would be destroyed. This was the most likely scenario. But Bane had come too far to leave the end of the Brotherhood of Darkness to chance. When Khan's army faltered this time, there were those in his camp, like Githany, who might turn against him. They could flee Rusan, scattering before the Jedi, and then Bane would have to deal with each of his rivals separately before he could become the unchallenged leader of the Sith. Better to be on hand guiding the events to the outcome he desired. That, however, meant he'd have to come up with a plausible story to explain his desire to join the Brotherhood even after a failed assassination. He thought about it for nearly an hour, considering and discarding a number of ideas. In the end, there was only one reason any of them would believe that he'd come back. He had to make them all think he wanted to overthrow Khan and become the new leader of the Brotherhood. Bane smiled at the subtle beauty of the plan. Khan would be suspicious, of course, but all his effort and attention would be focused on holding on to his position. He wouldn't realize his rival's true purpose, to exterminate the Brotherhood completely, to destroy every last Sith on Rusan. Plus, there was the added advantage of having another opportunity to convince Githany to join him. Once she understood what he'd truly become, and how he'd manipulated Khan and the other so-called Dark Lords, she might actually accept his offer to become his apprentice. At the very least, he would get a chance to see her face once she realized her poison had failed to... Ah! Bane let out a grunt and doubled over as a vicious pain ripped through his stomach. He tried to straighten up, but his body was suddenly racked with a prolonged coughing fit. He raised his hand to cover his mouth, and when he let it fall, it was covered in frothy red flecks of blood. Impossible, he thought, even as another stabbing pain through his guts dropped him to his knees. Revan had shown him how to use the Force to ward off poison and disease. No simple toxin should be able to affect anyone strong enough in the dark side to be a Lord of the Sith. Another coughing fit paralyzed him until it passed. He reached up to wipe the sweat rolling down his face and felt something warm and sticky on his cheek. A thin trickle of crimson tears was leaking from the corner of his eye. He rose shakily to his feet, turning his focus inward. The poison was still there. It had spread throughout his entire body, polluting and corrupting his system and damaging his vital organs. He was hemorrhaging internally, bleeding from his eyes and nose. Githany. He would have laughed if he hadn't been in such unbearable agony. He had been so confident, so arrogant, so convinced she was underestimating him. Instead, he had underestimated her. A mistake he vowed never to make again. If... he survived. He'd read enough about Synox to recognize the symptoms. If he'd detected it immediately, he would have been able to cleanse it from his system, just as he'd done with the rockwort venom that had concealed its presence. But Synox was the subtlest of poisons. The insidious toxin had sapped his strength as it had spread unnoticed throughout his body. Summoning all his resources, he tried to purge the poison from his body, burning it away with the cold fire of the dark side. The poison was too strong, or rather, he was too weak. The damage was already done. The Synox had crippled him, leaving his power a mere shadow of what it had been only hours earlier. He could dull its effects, slow its progress, and temporarily hold the most lethal symptoms at bay, but he couldn't cure himself, not now, weakened as he was. There was power in Lake Nath, but it was power he couldn't draw on. The ancient Jedi had been careful to lock the dark side safely away within its depths. The black stagnant waters were the only evidence of the power that lay forever trapped beneath its surface. Desperate to find some other way to survive, he staggered over to the land crawler on the edge of his camp. Ignoring the protests of his suddenly weary limbs, he clambered in behind the wheel and began to drive. He needed a healer. If the one called Kalib was still on this world, Bane had to find him. It was his only chance. He headed for the nearest battleground, a barren plain several kilometers away where the remains of those who'd fought and died still lay strewn about the ground. The rough rumble of the landcrawler's treads jarred him with each turn, and he gritted his teeth against the agonizing pain. As he drove, his world became a waking nightmare of darkness and shadow, all tinged with red. He was barely even conscious of where he was going, letting the Force guide him, even as he tried to use it to keep his body from succumbing to the effects of Githany's poison. The fear of death wrapped itself around him, smothering his thoughts. His will began to falter. It would be so easy to just surrender now and let it all end. Just let it all slip away and be at peace.
Snarling, he shook his head, dragging his thoughts back from the brink by repeating the first line of the Sith mantra over and over. Peace is a lie.